There is absolutely no question that what happened in Afghanistan was a complete disaster for the United States of America, a total embarrassment. But why did it happen? Could our policymakers be that incompetent? Could they be that stupid? Or is there something more going on? That is a question that was raised by the September 20th issue of the New American Magazine, Afghanistan Planned Disaster. Let's take a look. I am Gary Benoit, and this is Beyond the Cover. And today we have joining us William F. Jasper, senior editor of the New American Magazine. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. Pleasure being here.
Thank you. Now, you did one of the articles in the September 20th issue of the magazine looking at Afghanistan and whether or not it was a planned disaster. Specifically, you wrote about the generals who belonged to the World Government Promoting Council on Foreign Relations. But regarding that subject, as well as the broader subject, what happened in Afghanistan? Was that whole thing by happenstance, or was there a reason why it turned out to be as disastrous as it did?
Well, Gary, as I point out in my article and the other articles we have done show, the Afghanistan debacle, deadly debacle, which is one of the worst in our military history, is emblematic of what is wrong with our military leadership as it has been commandeered and co-opted by the Council on Foreign Relations and the political civilian leaders who have appointed the generals and admirals who are now in the top tier of our military at the Pentagon. And so what we saw happen in Afghanistan, where we left behind a devastated country, rich in natural resources, which China is going to move in to take and which will turn into a terrorist hotbed, after 20 years of misleadership there and trillions of dollars spent, we have now created another disaster that is going to haunt us in the very near future and long term. And we can get into the details of that.
Well, I know for many years, Bill, in your writings, you've recommended that we get out of Afghanistan. In fact, if you go back to 20 years ago, the recommendation was not to get involved with these foreign quarrels in the Middle East to begin with. So I assume you're glad we're out of Afghanistan, but what is it about the way we got out that made it so bad?
Well, there are a number of things, and you're right. We were opposed to going into Afghanistan in the first place. It was going to be another quagmire, which we said over and over again, and Republican and Democratic administrations, both led by globalists of the World Government Promoting Council on Foreign Relations, continued to put us in there, continued to make promises that everything was going to be fine, that Afghanistan was going to be a new wonderful democracy, et cetera. We knew that Afghanistan was not called the graveyard of empires for nothing. It has been throughout history. And so it was one of the worst places we could go into and occupy. And so, yes, we were very much in favor of getting out of it. We were spending all of our blood and treasure there. I lost personally very close friends, family members in Afghanistan. And of course, we have paid with our taxes. But what was really terrible about the way we extricated ourselves from it were a number of things. First of all, as we pointed out, the Biden administration, regardless of who it was who made the decisions for the actual operational withdrawal, President Biden has to take full responsibility for it. We first of all sent out the signal to the Afghan military forces that we were abandoning them and that they were going to be that we were pulling out. We did it in the dead of night from Bagram Air Base, which was the largest of the six major installations that we have in Afghanistan. That's the one where that was our air bridge. That's how all of our supplies and our military and our troops want to come into Afghanistan. And that's how they would have to evacuate, through Bagram. And so by turning over Bagram, basically to the Taliban, basically we pulled out of there, and Taliban was the first ones in there. We turned over billions of dollars in armaments to them and supplies. And we also sent the message to the Afghan government and the Afghan military that, hey, we're sneaking out of here. We're not supporting you anymore. And that sent the signal that, okay, all of those who in the military who were not really committed to us or to our program anyway, were free to go over to the Taliban. And even those who really were hoping to have a new Afghanistan there that wouldn't be a harsh Islamic rule or a harsh communist rule as it had been previously, were all of a sudden abandoned and knew that their time was limited. So it sent a very important signal, as well as operationally just removing our most important means of getting all our supplies and our people out of there, the military and civilian personnel. And so it's really unconscionable and inexcusable to do this. If you're going to abandon it, at least get the people out first, and then turn it over to them. It's what we ended up doing in Vietnam, where the same globalists running our Defense Department and State Department turned over Da Nang and Cameron Bay and all of our biggest bases in Vietnam to the Viet Cong and to the North Vietnamese communists.
I've seen estimates, Bill, that something on the order of $80 billion worth of equipment was left behind. Is there any rationale whatsoever for leaving that equipment behind? Have you heard any statement regarding that from the U.S. government or from the U.S. military?
Yes. Yeah, so now there's a lot of damage control by various news agencies covering for the Biden administration, saying, well, there's really not that much that the Taliban can use there. There wasn't any of the armaments that are operational. The planes that we left there are not, the Taliban won't know how to fly them. Taliban doesn't need to know how to fly them. They had much of the Air Force that were trained by Americans that have gone over to them. And many of the jets and helicopters were flown out of Afghanistan into Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, both of which are working closely with Afghanistan. They'll probably be training them there further and sending them back. So we've given a tremendous amount of arms. In fact, as you saw at the Kabul airport with many of the Taliban who were in there, they weren't, most of them carrying Kalashnikovs or Soviet or Chinese arms. They were carrying American arms. And those were given to them courtesy of the Biden administration. And not only that, not only the armaments, but really incredibly, the U.S. government, the State Department, turned over all of the biometric databases to the Taliban. That is, all of the Afghan military and civilian personnel, police forces, etc., government workers who had been entered into the database, that is your iris eye scans, other biometric identifying medical records, etc., employment records, all turned over to them. So they were using this then, the Taliban, going house to house, searching for people, has their fingerprints, has everything they need there to identify these people. Why would you do that? That is, in many cases, signing a death warrant for them, or at least identifying them so they can be tortured, sent to prison, so their family members can be exploited. All of these things have to be answered, and members of Congress have to drag these people, including Anthony Blinken. Of course, he has been getting scorched in some of his congressional testimony and his appearances there, but it has to go much further than that because really what we've seen here is criminal. We should be seeing wholesale firing and resignations, but we haven't. These people are shameless. They do something terrible like this, and they try to justify it.
Well, I know that the official explanation for turning over information of the people who helped us in Afghanistan was that the Taliban was helping to provide security for the U.S. evacuation. Do you think anyone actually believes that? And how can these generals and political leaders, how can they say that with a straight face?
Right. I mean, when you get into a predicament like this, where you are dealing with various bad actors, sometimes in a bad situation, you play one off against the other. But to play the lives of your friends and allies and your own citizens with these bad actors is unconscionable. And even if one is making some kind of agreement with an enemy or former enemy, a potential enemy, you don't give them the upper hand. If you have some specific individual you're trying to get through, and they have evidence that they have them and they need to identify them, yes, maybe you could do a trial. And it's my understanding this is what the Trump administration extrication plan was. Okay, you have to meet certain milestones. We will give up this, we will withdraw this if you provide good faith evidence of keeping your end of the agreement. And that's what you have to do in a situation like this. But to cut and run and still leave all these vulnerable populations there that you have a commitment to, whether it be the Afghans or specifically the Americans, is something that's indefensible.
Well, regarding working with an adversary, certainly Communist China is a self-proclaimed adversary of the United States of America. And yet, very recently in the news, our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top military leader in the country, reportedly was talking to his counterpart on more than one occasion in China, letting him know that if the United States were to attack China, that he would tip China off. Is that something the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, should be doing?
Yes. Well, General Mark Milley gave us a pretty good portent of his unfitness for the office very early on. He's done a number of things that, promoting the LGBTQ propaganda in the Pentagon, promoting the critical race theory, divisiveness in the Defense Department and in all the military services, the feminization of the military. He gave a very good indication of what was wrong with his character. You remember when the Antifa BLM had surrounded the White House as they were having riots all across, burning the nation, burning cities down. They had the White House surrounded, and they were destroying much of the area around the White House. And President Trump did his famous walk across the street to St. John's Church. He was doing the right thing here at a time. He's saying, okay, we're taking back control of this. Enough is enough. And General Milley went along with him, and Defense Secretary Mark Esper and Attorney General Bob Barr. And they went over to there, and he held up the Bible, and there was a photo op. And the media immediately attacked him and said, oh, you're disrespecting the George Floyd protests, and you're making a political statement out of this. And what did General Milley do? He came out on television and apologized. I should have never done this. This was terrible, et cetera. It showed that he was a political general. This gets back to what we said at the start. 60 years ago, in 1962, if you read the Council on Foreign Relations book, Continuing the Inquiry, it came out in 1996. They point out in there that in 1962, the Council on Foreign Relations began a new program of recruiting generals, young officers who would become generals and admirals. And they would then come up into flag rank and they would become the people who would run our military. And that's what we've been seeing. And so that we have virtually all of our military infiltrated with these globalists who are really political generals and admirals.
Bill, we're running out of time, but one final question. What is the intent behind all the treason? And I think the word treason is very appropriate, but what are these politicized generals and their political leaders, what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, I think for that, we can go to another admiral who knew from the inside. Admiral Chester Ward was the Judge Advocate General of the United States Navy, and he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations for 16 years, I believe. Anyway, he left, and in 1965, he wrote a book with Phyllis Schlafly called Kissinger on the Couch. And in there, he was very blistering towards the Council on Foreign Relations. And he said it is the organized globalists, the organized internationalists. He said they have a lust to surrender the sovereignty of the United States to a world government. And he said there is no term of greater opprobrium that they have greater disgust for than America first. And so it's very understandable that so many of these generals and admirals and people in the intelligence community would have such a hatred for Donald Trump, because he made that America first his slogan. And he said, we're nationalists, we're not globalists. And so the globalists, including the generals and admirals who have joined them, really view him and all Americans who believe in America first as the enemy.
Thank you very much, Bill. We appreciate you having you on the program. And for those who would like more information, we encourage you to look at the description below this video to get a copy of this issue of The New American about Afghanistan, and also to subscribe. Thank you very much.